Hour. It's going to be a very interesting conversation. Don't miss that. And then in the second hour, we'll do a retro visit with beloved Gerald Ensley, a conversation we had back in 2012, 10 years ago. I think you're going to find this interesting.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widden wanted, and it's been the Widden way of doing business for over 75 years. Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WiddenGlass.com.
Another opportunity for us to be together on this fine occasion when we've got Christian Dozier, Commissioner for Leon County District 5, having served three terms of office, decided back in November of last year that she would not throw in her hat, as we are fond of saying in political terms, for a bid for re-election. And at the time, as we've come to find out, there were many who were her associates and friends saying, yeah, you should run for mayor. Well, it's happened, of course, and the outcome of the primary was indecisive in some respects, most respects, in that among those candidates listed, among the four of them, there were two that prevailed: Christian Dozier, John Daly, now headed for a runoff in November. We're going to talk with Commissioner Dozier about what surprises may have come to her attention in that. A lot of us, I think, were a bit taken with how the decision to reelect Jeremy Matlow was decisive, along with some other folks. Rick Miner won handily. And let's see, who else did we have in that? There was the other county or city commissioner, Diane Williams-Cox. She won with 52% of the vote. So some of those decisions were handed back to all of us pretty clearly. Others remain, and this contest between Commissioner Dozier and Mayor Daly will no doubt continue to be the spectacle that it has been thus far. No want for drama. And we're going to get into it with Commissioner Dozier just to find out more about what she anticipates and some of the her motivations. We've not done a whole lot with her except for prior to the primary. We had her on the air with us. When was that? In July, I guess. But it happens that with the race coming to this now scheduled runoff, a lot of questions will come to bear that have a lot to do with how much Tallahassee is changing and has changed. You know, it's the chorus that we've been singing for the better part of this decade. And so it happens in the second hour. You're going to hear comments in this lengthy conversation with then Gerald Ensley, who sadly enough has passed away. He left us back in 18. But this is 10 years ago. At what time we had with him then was tumultuous. There were a number of issues at hand. A lot of those topics that he talked about were very significant to the time. Well, it's curious that a number of those same topics remain, and they're part of this conversation we're having about who we elect to represent us, particularly accountability. It's a big issue. And how we see ourselves generally as a community, meaning to say, are we simply the segmented groupings of people from various backgrounds, interests, even cultural background and racial orientations, and you know, what are we? Are we a community that is limited to a few zip codes? Are we well beyond that at this point? Even in talking with Commissioner Dozier, I want to find out from her perspective. You know, are we Tallahassee proper? Are we five counties? Are we a regional community? You know, the contention, and I'll say this, I think it's fair to say that so much of what goes on for us locally is indeed connected to what goes on for us regionally, and vice versa. There are ways in which we are connected in our history, in our values, our cultural background. I mean, you've heard me say this, and you certainly don't need to hear me say it because it's been well established, that an agrarian economy is the background or the backdrop for all that we are otherwise. Well, what does that mean? Well, historically, it meant that the economy was based in one fundamental fact, that slavery was essential to the work that was being done to create this rather productive economic engine. And the fact that the economy rested so squarely in that way on the backs of people who were enslaved and brought about a kind of mentality, a kind of thinking, a kind of way of assuming things about us, about one another, about ourselves. So Gerald Inslee will talk with us about that. We're going to get into it a little bit with Commissioner Dozier. But I think it's heartfelt in their comments. I think you'll find that there's a great deal of sincerity about the perspective. And it happens that we live at a time in this community, in Tallahassee. And if you want to define Tallahassee as, you know, 11 counties, that's okay. If you want to consider it a few zip codes, all right, you're entitled. But the truth of the matter is, a very famous person once said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. So I think it's reasonable to ask, what do you want to see Tallahassee being? Where do you want us to be on a lot of these questions, economically, socially, racially, culturally? Where do you want us to be in 10 years? Where do you want to be in 5 years? Because it's been 10 years since we talked with Gerald Inslee, and a lot of those same questions remain. And I think a lot of it has to do with what he calls a sort of parental, might even be willing to say patronizing sort of perspective. And so from my point of view, and I mean, that's what you pay me for here, of course, there is a kind of tokenism that goes on among public organizations, among people in leadership. There's a kind of tokenism that says we're going to put our marker here, whether it's in our history, whether it's in regard to our economy, if it's in regard to our racial blending, the diversity of our citizenry. We want to be able to say, yeah, we've got an incubator, or we've got an economic contribution over here to this particular heritage hub, or we've got an historic monument or an installation that recognizes our history in some fashion, or recognizes the Black community. I think we have to go beyond tokenism and find ourselves a way of communicating at a much deeper level.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Christian Dozier is Commissioner for District 5, Leon County. Of course, she is candidate for mayor, and we're going to talk with her at length about how that all came about to this date and the results of the primary now back in August. So let's welcome Commissioner Christian Dozier. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
You look so well. Rested, ready.
Feeling good.
Pushing forward. Where do you want to start?
We could start anywhere you want, Brian. We've got eight weeks.
Throw it back to me.
8 weeks to the general. There's a tremendous amount going on. But also in a really, it's a reflective time too, because I'm coming down to my last commission meetings after on the county commission after 12 years.
That is a thing. Isn't
it's
it?
An interesting, it's going to be an interesting couple of months.
One way or the other. Since we're kind of at that thought, if things don't go the way you want them to, in November, have you thought about what the future holds? I know you're engaged to be married, I think.
I am.
Congratulations there.
Thank you. But to your question, I guess I should say first, I think we are going to be successful. And I'm really excited about getting, you know, through the election. And if I am successful, becoming the next mayor of Tallahassee, and there's so much work we can do. Obviously, we won't know what happens until November 8th. And I may have said it last time we were together, but last November when I announced I wasn't going to run for a fourth term on the county commission, I had not yet decided to run for mayor. People had asked me, and I do have an alternative that I was going to work on at that time. And I will just say generally now it focuses on regional economic development. Mm-hmm. I've served on our regional planning council. It's a 9-county region for years. Mm-hmm. And since Hurricane Michael, renewed focus on collaboration and our economic development across the Big Bend. So that is something that I would work on as mayor. Mm-hmm. But if it goes the other way, it will be something that I continue to work
on. You're pursuing that as a concern.
Absolutely.
And it's a personal thing, I guess, huh? For you?
It is personal because I'm not just a Tallahassean and a Leon County resident all my life, but I'm a resident of the Big Bend. You know, I've grown up throughout the Big Bend from Gadsden County and Jackson County, Franklin, Gulf, and we have strength, more strength when we collaborate and bind together. Leon benefits and Tallahassee benefits when our surrounding counties, when our neighbors are strong and thriving. And so there's a lot more collaboration we need to see on economic development, workforce, on a lot of different areas.
In contrast to that mentality, it has been suggested that people who live in Tallahassee and Leon County tend to see themselves in an exclusive way. They don't see themselves as part of that larger whole. I remember when Richard Florida's research was announced, and the folks over there at the chamber, I think Sue Dick particularly, quoted in the newspaper saying, well, Florida's not talking about the real Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. And so that sparked a lot of curiosity. What do you mean by the real Tallahassee? Over the years that have passed since then, many have sat in that chair that you're sitting in with suggestions that Tallahassee is really much, much larger. So mm-hmm. this regional concern is something that's near and dear to your heart, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. It always has been, but I know Hurricane Michael really brought it more into focus.
Sure did.
The Planning Council covers most of the counties that were hardest hit by Hurricane Michael. And although Leon and Tallahassee were impacted for sure, we weren't nearly as impacted as our neighbors to the west. Mm. And yet the shared support, the donation drives, the people driving over to clear driveways and roads, it was quite remarkable. But it also showed us how much, we kind of celebrated the forgotten coast for a while.
Yeah, right.
But then we were forgotten after that storm, a Category 5 storm. Right. And we need to advocate together as a region. Any designation we have from the state or the federal government, we are the largest region with the lowest population and typically the lowest funding levels, whether it's transportation, homelessness, affordable housing, whatever you want to look at. So we will be stronger together. Mm-hmm. And I think more collaboration with our House and Senate
neighbors.
Reps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with our neighbors mm-hmm. On the local government, state government level has already started to help and can really continue to help. So again, as mayor of Tallahassee, that is absolutely a focus. I mean, certainly my job would be focused on Tallahassee first, yeah, without doubt. But the strength of Tallahassee, I think, also comes along mm-hmm. with the strengths of our region.
Indeed. It occurs to me that event itself, Hurricane Michael, cataclysmic in its scope and the long enduring outcome of all of that, still reeling from it, really still recovering from it, and maybe for another 10 years, who knows, resonated here.
Yes.
Because we talked with so many business owners and residents who were tied to people in Marianna and economically impacted because they had satellite offices or they had businesses that they owned along the coast. So mm-hmm. yeah, if we tend to think of ourselves in this myopic way, man, that is just not where it's at. You really are a native in that respect.
Yes.
And so for you too, I wonder how much of the shifting, the changing, the dynamics that go into the political realm have motivated you, I suppose, to stay involved.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. Thinking about whether or not to seek a fourth term on the county commission last year, as people were starting to encourage me to consider running for mayor, I could not see a path forward that wasn't continuing some of the work that I have done for the last 12 years. Mm-hmm. I've focused on economic development. I've focused on job creation since the beginning. Innovation Park, we've talked about that in the past as an example. The incubator we're building out there, I've worked on that project for 8 years. Mm-hmm. But what people don't actually know is that, for example, last fall, we worked collaboratively with other counties around the region through the Planning Council. It was Innovation Park, TCC, FAMU, FSU, others, on a regional economic development approach, which would have brought incubators, kind of satellites from Innovation Park out into the other counties to help support entrepreneurs and workforce training in those counties. We weren't successful in that grant application, but it was a really good collaborative project and thought a lot about how freight and logistics work across the region, how manufacturing could develop, the new industrial hemp industry that we've been focused on, growing products through the region, processing them, and then manufacturing and doing some of the research and development here in Leon and Tallahassee. So in all of those ways, when we think about economic development as a region, we have more assets that we can tout. We have a lot of skill sets and a lot of things that other regions don't have. And it will also always benefit Leon and Tallahassee. But we can't be myopic in our focus. We need to think about our neighbors.
Talking with candidate for Tallahassee Mayor, Commissioner Christian Dozier. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever? I will try not to sing out of key.
We're back. We're talking with Commissioner Christian Dozier. Were you surprised at all with the outcome, not only for yourself, but for other candidates in the primary?
Might have been a little bit surprised, but not that much. We knew we were going to go into the primary strong. And we knew that four candidates in the race, the other two, aside from the incumbent, were going to pick up some votes. But I think seeing that well over 50% of primary voters chose someone other than the incumbent. And for us to come out, even if it was a slim majority, we came out with the most votes in the primary. And that was a bit of a surprise, I will say. We were very happy, of course. We were celebrating. And then Wednesday morning, day after the primary, we got up and got right back to work. And the momentum has been incredible, Brian.
A sliver of margin between Mr. Daley and Commissioner Dozier, Mayor Daley and Commissioner Dozier, 153 votes separates you. I don't remember a particular race in recent history of that narrow margin in outcome. And you do mention that, of course, there were two other candidates in the mix, but distant in their attempts. So it really came down to the difference between Dozier and Daley. How do you describe that?
The difference between us?
Yeah.
I can focus on two primary differences. One is the decisions we've made, which really point to our vision for the future and our understanding of what Tallahassee needs, what we need to do to benefit our entire community. Obviously, the Doak Campbell Stadium funding has taken a huge focus, not just in this race, but in a number of races. But really, I think the reason why that matters is because, from my perspective, I've listened to people for years, read the studies that have come out, and they all say the same thing. If we want to address poverty, affordable housing, growing our economy, increasing smart and responsible development, it all comes back to jobs and workforce training. And this was our pot of money, our golden ticket to get more jobs and more training. The Doak Campbell Stadium project is a good one. They needed to do that. The boosters could fund that themselves. So I really advocated against that, not as against FSU for sure. I'm an alumni. I love FSU. But it's because I understand and I've listened over the years and listened to the people who were in the room during those meetings about what they need in our community. People saying that, you know, single mothers and others that they're in school and they just want to have the confidence to have a good job that pays a living wage where they can support their family and have benefits. Putting all our eggs in one big basket doesn't help us do that.
So you're saying that Doak Campbell Stadium improvements, the vote on that, and what it represents or what it represented at the time to voters?
I think what it represented at the time to voters and what we each of us understands as the needs of our community. And the votes that we take do matter. Some people don't want us talking about Doak Campbell anymore. It's old news, it's done. But for an incumbent to run or someone who's been in office, even if I'm running for a different office now, you can judge me based on my record and what I say I'm going to do in the future.
Who doesn't want to talk about Doak Campbell Stadium?
Those who voted for it. Yeah. Many of those who supported and voted for it say it's done. It's old news. They don't want to talk about it. So that is one primary difference. But it also points to the second difference, which is, and really, Brian, I got to say, one of the things that has come up for years, people have asked, what happened to John Daly? What happened to the John Daly we knew on the county commission? We've really seen somebody different in recent years. Someone who is willing to accept and wants to accept staff recommendation on day one and has very little use for listening to the public or for hearing other perspectives from his colleagues. And in Doak Campbell, for example, was ready on day one, a year ago May, before we even saw the analysis from staff. So he's just ready to go. For me, I want to listen to the public. I serve the public as a county commissioner. I will serve the public as mayor. This is a collaborative process, if you will. We get expert advice from our staff, from others. We need to have public participation, and then we try to make the best decision possible for our whole community. It takes a little more time. It can be efficient. It doesn't have to take forever, for sure. We need to make decisions and keep things moving. But the controversies, the divisiveness that we've seen really highlighted at the city commission in recent years, but also with the public and with the community, you know, in our blueprint meetings and others, I believe that comes from this resistance to hearing from the public, from to hearing from your colleagues and just saying it's my way or the highway.
I wonder, too, how many people have been moved in whatever direction that ends up being in regard to the casting a vote by those concerns that have come from a lot of different people in a lot of different circumstances. Then again, the lack of transparency.
Yes.
Contracts, and we've got it happening again where city commissioners are ready to just ink another commitment, and we have Commissioner Matlow saying, well, hold on there, Bob Louie. Can we take a look at the contract before we sign off on this? It's kind of the way you do business. And then people saying, oh, come on, you know, you're being critical of the process. well, the process is supposed to be transparent, isn't it? Or is it not?
Absolutely. The process is supposed to be transparent. For your elected officials, we can only talk about public business within a public meeting. That's the Sunshine Rules. But there's another element of that, of how many decisions are made within the city management or and before we get to a commission meeting and whether or not we're really opening that conversation to other experts in the community and to the public. So there's one recent example. So Doak has taken a lot of focus, but that's not the only example. So transparency within city government has been a very long-term issue, and it hasn't gotten better in the last few years. I'd say it's gotten worse. So right now, we're in between two budget hearings at the city, and they have $1 million that's earmarked for gun violence. How that appropriation happens, what programs get that $1 million, there's a lot of questions circling around right now about how much involvement the other commissioners or the public will have, because it looks like the recommendations will come from two meetings that John Daly held at his house with a select group of organizations and even city staff. And that's really troubling to a lot of people. As an elected, I should be meeting with my constituents. I do it all the time, listening to people in the community to get the best ideas. But to make a decision about what to recommend at a commission meeting for a funding allocation in those private meetings, there's just something really odd about that. And it's making people feel like he picked winners and losers by this group that he invited to his house. So it's still happening. It's not just decisions in the past.
Talking with Commissioner Kristen Dozier, she is candidate for mayor, running in now close competition with the incumbent mayor, John Daly. And you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
We're back. We're talking with Kristen Dozier. She is commissioner for District 5. Leon County has served faithfully all these many years. Mayor Daly sent his regards, and he said, the question is, do we move forward cleaning up politics in our city, or do we turn back the clock on ethics reform? Do we want a mayor who consistently says yes to good, high-paying jobs, or one who always seems to have an excuse for voting against investments in our community? That's what this race will be about. I think that last phrase was aimed at, I think you, in regard to always seeming to have some reason why you vote against good, high-paying jobs, according to Mayor Daly.
That is what he says, but he has never explained a comment like that. I'm pretty astonished by it. I was astonished when I read it 2 weeks ago, and just listening to you read it again. John Daly and I have served together for 12 years, 8 on the county commission, and the last 4 as he
since like
he's been
good
mayor.
Friends.
Well,
or
you
at
know,
least working colleagues.
Yes, we were certainly working colleagues. Again, a lot of us have asked the question: what happened in the last 4 years? Because this is a very different mentality, a very different person than we saw on the county commission for the 8 years, my 8 years prior, and then he had, you know, served a bit longer. So when he says, I consistently vote against good paying jobs, I have no idea what exactly he's talking about. We have both supported Danfoss, Amazon, other incentives. I've worked for 8 years, as I've said, on the incubator at Innovation Park, which is under construction now. I have been the biggest advocate for workforce training and job creation on our Blueprint OEV board for years. I think it's fair to say, and a lot of people in the entrepreneurial space and in the economic development space will say, that I do more homework and I show up at more of those meetings and do the deep work. So this statement, you can take it as political spin. You can take it as just dishonest, because I don't think he has ever given us the details of what he means by this statement.
Okay.
Now, two things, my speculation. One, and all appreciation and respect to Commissioner Matlow, John Daly has tried to push me towards where Commissioner Matlow is a lot. Matlow and I both know that we don't always agree. We both supported Amazon. I think he voted for Amazon, for example. So even, but some developments and other things like that, I will support them and he may not. So there, we don't line up entirely on votes. I'm going to get back to this in a second, but the block voting that we've seen in recent years is something totally new. I never experienced that for my first 8 years on the county commissioner blueprint. But so John has been trying to paint this picture that does not stand up to scrutiny at all. And the only thing that he rests on, this is where it comes to, Brian, is he says that I didn't support all these jobs because I voted against the bond that included Doak Campbell Stadium.
Right.
I was working hard to pull that funding out so we could create more jobs. What they did actually cost us thousands of jobs. So anyone hearing statements like that, I hope they look at the facts because they will paint an entirely different picture.
It is an interesting circumstance in which all of you serving on the city commission, that is to say all of the city commissioners, not including you, but have for themselves been squared off on a lot of those sort of issues where it was a kind of 3-2, 3-2, 3-2. And I wonder too if that is going to change any further unless there's a change in the mayor of Tallahassee.
That is the question for the next 8 weeks. I think for every voter in Tallahassee, do we want to see another 4 years of gridlock and divisiveness and conflicts and controversy at the city commission? Do we want to continue to see no movement on improving transparency or fiscal responsibility within city government? Because that's what we've had the last 4 years.
Right. Well, Diane Williams-Cox is going to be back. She's going to continue. So Matlow's going to continue. So none of that changes.
None of the other four stay the same.
The only remaining variable would be the mayorship.
Right. Yeah. And for the way I have served this community over the last 12 years, I have never lined up with any block of votes. I'm on Team Tallahassee, if you will. Now you're going to tell me that's a little Hallmarkish as well, but that's okay. I may agree with where Commissioner Williams-Cox and Richardson are sometimes. I may agree with where Commissioners Porter and Matlow are sometimes. But there's also difference of opinion among those four. The real change is a leader in the mayor's office. The mayor has one vote, just like everyone else on the board. But you are the board chair. You have to lead in a way that brings people together, that doesn't create and stoke controversy, that opens City Hall to the public, again, making efficient, good decisions that don't last too long, but really bringing people together. And John Daly has proven that he cannot do that and is unwilling to do that. Now, I, quite frankly, have upset people, I mean, if you want to say it politically, on the left and the right, but really different constituents over time. I mean, quite frankly.
You've pissed everybody off.
Well, you know, I've also made people happy a lot of times,
too,
you know.
I'm very good at that.
That may sound a little odd, but we'll take development and our comp plan and large development and expansion. There was a vote this spring that to expand the urban service area for three different developments. And there was some assumption that I would vote against that proposal. Well, it's in line with our rules. It's a legal process. And there was no legal justification that I could see to deny that. Now, we can say we don't like the developer. Some did. I did not say that. We could say we want more affordable housing, other things. Those are other policy decisions. Right. When you apply for a building permit, when you apply for a zoning change, you should have the confidence that you're going to be judged based on the rules we have at that time. We can talk about those rules.
So you're looking at
It's a fair process.
Yeah, the merits of that movement at that time on its own face.
And there is a way to grow in a responsible smart and environmentally sensitive way. We can do that. And we do need to tweak some of our rules. Absolutely. I've been advocating for that for years. Mm. We need to make sure, for example, city permitting process is more efficient. It costs owners and contractors a lot of money waiting for the permits. But we also need to make sure that you can use sustainable building products, that it costs you more perhaps to take out trees than to save them in some circumstances. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more we can do on the process to make it more efficient and preserve the quality of life we have and still allow good development to happen in our community, because we do need more housing.
Folks, we have had this opportunity today because Commissioner Dozier is kind enough to try to carve off a slice of her very busy day and bringing to us news of the hour in regard to her bid for the mayorship of Tallahassee. As all of us are well aware, I hope at this point, it is a close race. I don't think we'll expect it to be anything less. At the same time, I'm hoping that we'll all do a little better job, perhaps, at least work a little bit harder to try to understand where these two candidates are on so many different topics, including the distribution of resources and this process that we keep talking about. Mm-hmm. How is it that decisions are made? Commissioner Christian Dozier, thank you.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's always a joy to be here.
Generous gift to give us this much of your time. Folks, you stay with me. We've got more coming up, a special conversation from our past with Gerald Ensley. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. So it goes, but I'm glad that you're a part of what we are doing here. And as I, speaking of teas, mentioned in our earlier remarks in the first hour, I've got Gerald Ensley with us in the second hour for the duration. And for that matter, again, if you are a bit new to town, it's a name that may not be entirely familiar to you necessarily. But for most of us, for any of us who have been in Tallahassee for any length of time, Gerald Ensley's name is certainly celebrated. Some might even consider him revered or a sort of senior statesman. Venerated was the word I was looking for, but that sounds a little too lofty. He wouldn't like that. Gerald Ensley served this community as a sports reporter and later on as a journalist at the Tallahassee Democrat for years. He retired back in 2015 after 26 years with the newspaper, but he stayed active as an observer and commentator on the local scene, and that included writing for the newspaper occasionally. He appeared on WFSU's Perspectives many times to share his thoughts. And then again, he had this very diverse sort of background. He'll talk about that in this conversation, working odd jobs and such, and then realizing that he could certainly do what he saw being done in newspaper reporting. It just sort of piqued his interest. So he went back to school, went back to Florida State, and got his degree there, went to work for the newspaper, and on he went. And boy, what a career and what a contribution to this community, our understanding of how it is that we are put together. He passed away in 2018 after having not only served this community, he was a part of several other communities growing up. His father was with the Air Force. He was actually born in Japan. And so growing up, like a lot of military families, traveled from Newfoundland to Tampa, Maryland, I mean, Satellite Beach, Albuquerque, all of that. And I think that that kind of mix then was contributive to his perspective. And so we're going to spend the rest of the show today in this conversation that we had with him. It was his first appearance on the show back in 2012. So 10 years ago, Gerald Inslee was in our studios then. And what I want you to pay attention to especially are the remarks that have to do with where we are now and where we are going. It is the contributions of a man who spent his lifetime understanding Tallahassee and Tallahassee's history.
In his journal about why this was a great place, he John Lee Williams mentioned on two occasions the beautiful babbling waterfall.
Uh-huh.
And so it took on, I think, a life of its own. He called it a well-watered area highlighted by this. And so indeed it was a great spot.
Was he just trying to sell the idea?
In many ways. He talked about how fertile the hills are and how it's be a great place for agriculture of all kinds. And in those days, I mean, agriculture of all kinds was indeed your main commerce. People who moved here would have to be raising their own food. And as you and I were talking earlier, this is where planters came for the fertile land.
Yes.
So it was a major selling point, the land. And so he mentioned this thing. You know, the myth sort of is that they camped by this babbling brook, and I'm not sure that's borne out in his comments. But certainly he saw the waterfall, the cascade, and noted it as a very attractive feature. But I don't think he said, well, we can go up, we can go to St. Mark's, or we go to Tallahassee. I think that cascade sells me on Tallahassee.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the deciding factor. It was one of the many factors he mentioned as attractive about this area.
What do you think did move at the time? The state was not a state. We were still a territory. And
right.
So... But a decision had to be made as to where the territorial...
It took too long. They had taken something like 6 weeks... to go to the Pensacola people taking as much as 6 weeks to make the Saint Augustine for one of the first meetings, and it was too much hardship even for them. And those of them, in those days, all things going smoothly, it would be 2 weeks.
Sure.
So the fact that it took 6 weeks. In fact, when Williams came here, Williams took something like 6 or 8 weeks. He got shipwrecked on St. George Island.
Oh, my.
And spent a week there before he could make it to Tallahassee. I mean, travel was rough. So
we take that for granted.
We take that for granted.
We forget how treacherous it was.
Exactly. So I mean,
not to mention desperados along the way.
And I think they encountered some.
Those.
They encountered some problems at St. George Island.
Yeah. Well, in fact, then as a writer for you, our history has been a love, a certain pursuit that you've done well in bringing a number of. Stories to light, bringing a lot of that history within our reach.
Tallahassee history is important to me. Here's sort of the thing I always say. I was a military brat, an Air Force kid. Uh-huh. We moved around quite a bit until I was about 15. Hmm. And I came up to Tallahassee to go to college. And suddenly here's this town that had been here, what seemed to me, forever. People's names were on the stores. People's names were on the streets. I mean, there was a sense of permanence here. So I fell in love with that immediately.
Yeah.
And then later, I started reading the Tallahassee Democrat. And I gotta tell you, most of my love for Tallahassee history was kindled by the Democrat,
really,
which wrote stories about the history, and of course wrote stories in which it took for granted that you knew who some of these people were. But in particularly Malcolm Johnson, the editor of the paper, used to write a front page column. And Malcolm is renowned or reviled, however you feel, for his politics. He was something of a conservative, although a big naturalist, a passionate historian. Mm-hmm. And I would say one out of every 5 or 6 columns, Malcolm wrote some kind of history about something happening in Tallahassee. And he wrote them so warmly and with such great details, I became very interested in the history of Tallahassee.
And that inspired my love of all Tallahassee history.
Yeah. I mean, my love of Tallahassee history and my reading of it. Yeah. And then when I went to work for the paper, I came in contact with it more and more.
How did that happen? How did you decide you wanted to
I came to school in 69, went for 2 years and dropped out. As I told my father, I don't need a college education. And after 7 years of doing grunt labor, I decided, yes, I do need a college education. I drove a cab for 4 of those years and enjoyed that immensely. In fact, I learned a lot about Tallahassee and its streets driving that cab. Uh-huh. But and again, it starts with a Democrat. While I was driving that cab, it became my thing every day to get up and get a Democrat, which in those days was still published in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I'd get up, go to Andrew's Grill is about to celebrate its 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
And I would go there for lunch. Andy was the first guy to sell bagels in this town. I was the first place I ever had bagels.
Yes, I remember that.
So I'd go there, have a cup of coffee and bagel, and read the newspaper. And then I'd continue to read. I used to read that paper cover to cover.
Yeah.
And eventually came a day that I said to myself, I can do this. And so I thought you had to go to college to do that. So I went back to college, I went to the Flambeau. Second day I was in college, second day I returned to college, I went to work for the Flambeau, was there 2 years, finished up my degree, became a sports editor. The week after I graduated, Walker Lundy hired me to be a sports writer at the Democrat, and I've been there ever since.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and 3 generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 75 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
From 2012, a conversation we had then with Gerald Ensley. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
It is difficult for any white person to talk at length critically about FAMU, because in so doing, if you criticize the problems, you are in some way saying, you are in some way criticizing black people, because that's who's been running the university. And you can argue, you want to say, I'm just saying the operation's bad. I'm not saying it's right. Because you're black or white. I'm saying it's because the operation's bad. But it's dangerous, and sometimes it's unfair. I mean, they are still working with less resources maybe than other places do.
Yeah.
So
they are challenged regardless because of those circumstances. And yet,
there's also this. I guess
with what they are working with, your point is, folks, when this incident occurred, the death of this young man, why was it that Dr. Amos didn't just simply step down at that time? And that was, as I recall, that was really your point.
Well, that was the point. He didn't take responsibility for it, and I think part of that might have been a reflection of his personality, in that he's not a very effusive man. Uh-huh. And so even when he was saying he's sorry, it didn't have the ring of sincerity, or didn't have the ring of real concern or real urgency, which I thought the situation called for.
Sure.
And that may be a reflection of the fact that that's his personality.
And why the Board of Regents didn't demand that resignation.
Well, the Board of Governors. It's because there's a great amount of family at FAMU. And this comes back to the idea of, how can those of us on the outside truly understand? And so in a family, you're going to take a longer view of some of these situations than maybe the outsiders.
Right.
I think one of the key things, this is something I've said for years, and that is that For years, because of segregation and even the slow evolution after segregation, the establishment gave FAMU's money and essentially said, go away, don't bother us. Here's your money. You know, we don't care what's happening over there, because they didn't care about the university. And what happens is we get through the 70s, to the 70s and 80s, and now they start to see, hey, this is a state university. We're not ignoring them anymore. And so as a result of that, now they're looking at it more critically. And so all these policies and inhibitions, if you will, that had grown up there as part of their culture are now coming under scrutiny. You know, I don't know. It's like if you... I struggle for a good example here, but they were left alone for so long, and then suddenly we're holding them to a different standard. And so I think that has been the wrenching part. We're at a transition period, even if that transition period is over the course of 10, 15, 20 years, where we're holding them to a higher standard. And now legislature is looking at their money. How are you spending the money? What, you're not keeping tabs of it? Now we are looking at things like you're not paying your employees on time? You're not providing financial aid on time? Those things have been going on for years, but now people suddenly are paying attention. And so they're being held to a standard they hadn't been held to before. And in some regard, that is the fault of all of us who did not put that kind of attention on it before.
Well, and you used the term family. I think that those dynamics inside of a family where an individual is labeled, and it could be, you know.
Certainly, they feel any criticism of them is a label. One of the big fears at FAMU is that any criticism of them is somehow masking the fact you want to do away with us. I mean, there was a brief movement. It was no more than a movement. It's sometimes been termed a reality that the legislature tried to merge FSU and FAMU. I don't think it ever came to that. It was simply a discussion by certain legislators. I don't think FSU ever had any interest in it, but it set up the perception at FAMU that they are always under siege and that the next step is to either merge them with FSU or to eliminate them. I don't believe in any fashion FSU has any interest in merging with them, and I don't believe it's practical on any level to eliminate them. But that is the fear they sense anytime this criticism comes. It is changing. There's what we've got is a modern generation of FAMU graduates, people in their 20s, 30s, and even 40s, people who have moved away to other cities and are therefore not here on a daily basis to feel part of the family, who say, hey, I want the university to operate just like all other universities. I want it to come up to these standards. And so they're for that. And that will eventually triumph. Each change will bring more progress. Right now, for an older generation that has been part of FAMU, there's the fear that every time you talk about what we have to change, you're just saying change or you'll eliminate us.
Well, and it's tragic, too, in that FAMU has produced some marvelous
work. And there is a role. A lot of people say, why do we need a historically black university? Or why do we need a black university in these integrated times? Well, I think you can continue that history, that basis, that foundation can still be there. It can still be a place where the majority population is black. All I would like to see FAMU do is operate fiscally and academically, more operationally, better than it has. I think there has been a lack of professionalism in its operation.
Do you think it is tied into their origin, the fact that, and you mentioned this, when monies were allocated, we were still living in a time when segregation was in force, and especially in the South, the cultural aspects of that were very much in play.
The white power didn't care.
You're not one of us. You're not included.
Yeah.
Go do your thing.
Do your thing. Raise the teachers for your black schools. Educate your businessmen for your black businesses. I mean, there wasn't a sense of their being part of us. Yeah. I think that's changed now, and that's what's brought the different scrutiny.
Yeah.
When I came here in 1969, and I mentioned I worked out in some drudge jobs for many years, the old style mentality was still very strong here.
Yeah.
Business owners thought that they were doing, I worked at least two jobs where I, as a, you know, as a young guy in his late teens and early 20s, was making more per hour than black men who had been there for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
It was incredible to me. Now, granted, I was making $1.75 an hour, and they were making $1.35 an hour. Neither one of us was getting rich.
Yeah.
But the point was, I made more than them because they were just devalued. I worked for at least two owners, and God bless them, who thought they were doing a big favor for their black help in that they gave them their cast-off furniture and clothes and stuff. Yeah. And there was that definitely paternalist mentality. And here in Tallahassee, we haven't done so much maybe in recent years, but for a good 20 years, we were quick to note in the paper, the first black deputy, the first black principal, the first black anything,
right.
Because that was so groundbreaking when it started happening in the 70s. Yeah. I mean, really, The mentality here persisted a long time after slavery, you know. And so, yes, that said, one of the greatest things I noticed, and maybe it's just, and maybe people who come here late don't realize it so much, is the great degree of that attitude not existing. The fact that there are blacks living in every neighborhood, that there are blacks in every job, that you can't imagine if somebody from 20 years ago came back and saw black and white kids strolling through the mall together, they would flip out. I mean, you would never have seen that. I remember that you're talking about first, and I'm thinking this is 1993. Charles Billingsley, the late city commissioner who ran for mayor, was shown on the front page of our paper kissing his white wife. I tell you, that would have set up a firestorm.
We can only be grateful that we didn't have email then.
That's right. We can only be grateful.
At least you could choose to not answer the phone.
So on one hand, Tallahassee persisted in this paternalistic attitude towards blacks longer than I think a lot of places did.
Yeah.
And yet by the same token, one of the most striking things in Tallahassee is how so little of that exists now and how accepted
in a relatively short period of time.
I mean, we have blacks in almost every major administrative and supervisory position. I mean, black and white kids date, they're friends, they live next door to each other. I mean, we were Old South for a long time, and now we're New South faster than you might have expected.
From 2012, a conversation we had then with Gerald Inslee. We find ourselves at a time, Mr. Inslee, when the technologies have impacted every area of life. And I wonder, too, we tie this back to some of the things you mentioned, the amount of change that we've experienced culturally in the 20 years. And we're hitting on some of the racial questions, but a lot of other issues, too.
Mm-hmm.
The revitalization of Gain Street, the Cascade Parks Project. They're bringing Richard Florida's ideas wholesale and saying, this is what we need to do here so that we can be like Austin, Texas.
Right. I think it's,
do you buy into all that? Or?
Well, I don't know about being Austin, Texas, but I do think that we're having a remarkable revitalization.
It is remarkable.
And I think it's forward-looking. I've been a big fan of Gain Street. There's nowhere to go downtown. There was this one thing. We've talked about the 18-hour downtown, but the fact is, so much of downtown land is otherwise claimed. We're not going to. There's churches and state buildings, and there's stuff down there that will always limit how much commercial and retail you can put in there. Gain Street is a perfect opportunity to create this new corridor. I mean, many cities have this sort of, if you will, second downtown.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a great idea. I think Cascades Park. Is a wonderful idea, I think it's going to add immeasurably to that. Right now, you know, we're still in the grip of a recession or whatever we want to call it, economic downturn, and yet there's all kinds of building going on in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of revitalization. They just, a small bit is they just tore down that building on Monroe Street that was once McCrory's, where the lunch counter sit-ins were. They recently tore down the formerly Osley McMullen Law Firm business building on Calhoun Street. Everywhere you look in this town, they're tearing down and putting up new. And Florida State University and Florida A&M, for that matter, both factor into this. When I came to FSU, FSU talks all the time about how it's the smallest campus, physical campus, in state university system, with 450 acres or 432 acres or whatever here on the main campus.
Right.
But they have, when I came, there was elbow room aplenty. Now they have shoehorned in 20 or 30 different buildings. I mean, the medical school and psychology complex looks like it's been there forever.
Yeah.
The two new dorms, the new wellness center, the revitalization of the Johnston building, the Williams building, Ruby Diamond. I mean, over at FAMU, the new Lawson Gym, the workout center. This town is remaking itself at all times.
Oh.
And I think it's impressive. Whether or not we need to be in Austin, I don't know. Part of the charm is being a mid-sized city.
Yeah.
But you can't sit still. New stuff brings new feelings, new excitement, and a better city to live in.
Well, and it occurs to me, we've not had for ourselves something that identified us intrinsically other than being the state capital,
right,
or being Florida State University. Does that present a challenge? Is that one of the reasons?
Is Cascades Park going to be our sort of people will come away from Tallahassee, hey,
yeah,
did you see Cascades,
yeah,
Park? Or people talk about Gain Street like they talk about the plaza in Kansas City. I don't know, maybe so.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly on a smaller level.
Right.
I think we need it. I mean, we've talked many times about the fact that tourists don't come to Tallahassee because, you know, once you've gone to the top of the Capitol and gone to the Museum of Florida History, both of which I love, you've done it all.
Yeah.
But if indeed, in fact, we talk all the time about jobs, 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 jobs. I don't necessarily think jobs, jobs, jobs should be the motivation for everything. But all these things do provide new economic opportunity.
Yeah.
And however slow it may be, but as we if they rebuild, we've already seen new businesses coming,
right,
to Gain Street.
Right.
So,
you think Bob Enzer and his gang will find the
tools for the Performing Arts,
yeah,
Center?
It's
a long shot. We need a Performing Arts Center. I have never understood the antipathy toward it by so many rank and file people. I understand for some it's a matter of should government be providing for the arts, but I see it as government providing the infrastructure that then brings in the arts.
Yeah.
And I think we need, you know, people say, well, we got Ruby Diamond, but Ruby Diamond's owned by FSU. You can say we've got Civic Center, even though the Civic Center is a horrible place for so many cultural activities, a great place for basketball. But so we need a Performing Arts Center. Whether or not we're ever going to find the private funding for something that's now been downscaled from its original $113 million to somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 to $50 million, I don't know. We need it, certainly.
Yeah.
I do think that the imperatives of diversity resonate harder with our public officials, at least those public officials that have been here for a while, than in many communities. I think we do several things mindful of their impact on diversity.
Oh.
That we do certain things to make sure blacks and others and women are included.
Oh.
We do that because of the history of this town. You know, I do object. Sometimes it's seen as FSU overlording on FAMU. I think that's an unfair rap. I remember a former FSU vice president, Pat Hogan, who one time I said to him, you know, FSU doesn't seem to have very good records of its history. And he said, we were too busy making history to keep the history. And that was true. I mean, again, FSU was just a little struggling university for so long.
Yeah.
It's only been in these last, you know, I mean, you start probably with the presidency of Bernie Slager and then go to the great changes that Sandy Dalembert and T.K. Wetherill made, and
yeah,
Eric Barron is now carrying on. I mean,
How much of that do you attribute to the hiring of a certain head football coach?
I think the hiring of Bobby Bowden and the success he brought to the program created an awareness and a visibility that certainly raised FSU's profile.
And money.
And eventually the money. We often forget most of this money that is raised is going straight to sports. You know, what are the boosters raising now? 16, 20 million a year? Great money going to sports. I mean, FSU every once in a while makes a show, the FSU football program, the FSU athletics department, every once in a while makes a show of, we gave $250,000 to the library this year. No kidding. Out of that $20 million, you gave $250,000. Well, thank you, brother. You know, but the fact is,
you can keep the change.
Yeah, but that said, there are numerous. It has FSU has now had two capital campaigns on the academic side, the FSU Foundation side, which have each raised in excess of $200 million. So yes, FSU suddenly became more visible, more powerful, more able to tap into these things. But largely, again, this story goes back to the fact it grew up to have enough graduates who moved out into the world, which is what's going to happen with FAMU, for that matter. For a long time, FAMU has not been able to tap into private monies because for a long time, its graduates were going out into second-class jobs. And only in the last 10 or 20 years are we starting to get FAMU graduates who are going out into jobs. They're paying as well as whites used to get, and now you've got FAMU grads becoming CEOs and stuff like that. I think we're going to see a dramatic increase in FAMU's private giving over the next 10 or 20 years. It's a matter of time and growth. FSU has grown up to have enough graduates moving out there who come back, and yes, they give $1 million to improve the track facilities, but you've got also those come back and giving $1 million to help the College of Social Sciences, or to help DeVoe Moore, bless his heart, is now giving millions for a business program. It may be a conservative business program, but it's a business program. Yeah. And Al Dunlap, who may be a shark in the business world, has come back and has given lots of money. So
and
I mean,
JMI.
And in fact, Al Dunlap, who's given millions, who's given millions, not even an FSU graduate. His awareness came through the FSU football program. To go back to your original point, he became an FSU football fan, became introduced to the university, and pretty soon he's giving money for things that are not football related. Yes, Bobby Bowden.
The house that Bobby built.
I say, Bobby Bowden, from whom all blessings flow.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom. Conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
From 2012, a conversation we had then with Gerald Ensley. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Expansion is always a bit of a hazardous area, isn't it?
I would say we fight a battle right now, possibly because of the downturn economy, but possibly always because business is preeminent, to protect some of the physical features of this area. I think the land of America, the environment of America, the resources of America are always under assault from business forces. Here, I'm a liberal. I gotta tell you, I don't believe everything should be done for business. I don't believe that business is the rationale for everything. We have a recent example here is the Wakulla Springs. Wakulla Springs decided to uphold its 26-year ban on allowing divers to dive in there for non-research purposes. They do occasional research projects where they go down, measure the spring, stuff like that. There are those who oppose that, who say, hey, we ought to be a free enterprise. You ought to let us dive down there, and we won't do any harm. Some of them probably won't do any harm, but if enough of them come, eventually there will be harm. And to me, it's like snowmobiles in Yosemite. Do we really need to allow every bit of our environment or our land to be compromised in the name of making money? I don't think so. So I think Tallahassee fights that challenge. Mm-hmm. I like to believe that we have leaders, we have commissioners, city and county, who are mindful of the impacts. But I go to commission meetings, I go to planning meetings, and I see that the compromise comes down to this. Can we deny a person who has purchased land the right to do whatever they want with that land? Mm-hmm. We'll put some restrictions on them, but we can't stop them. So I think we do lose we have lost some of the charm, some of the necessary protections in the name of business. And right now, it's so hard to fight against businesses because everybody says, we've got to have jobs. If we don't have jobs, we'll die.
You know what I hear a lot? Complaints about the sign ordinances.
Right.
People
right.
want to put up a sign on their business.
Right.
And boy, but,
see, I don't see.
Or the digital billboards and this
right.
kind of stuff.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with. I'm sort of perplexed here because I have said I like billboards. I'm not opposed to digital billboards, but I certainly understand the urge to keep a certain lack of visual clutter out there.
Yeah.
And so I support that. So, but so many things are done in the name of we have to create jobs.
Yeah.
I just don't think that can be the rationale for everything. I think jobs will grow intrinsically yeah. from almost every effort, and I think they will grow from many good efforts.
Yeah.
I think we can still have jobs. I mean, Wakulla Springs can still produce jobs for people just coming to swim and ride the boats. And stay in the lodge, which they're going to renovate.
Yeah.
Go to the restaurant, which they're going to improve. I don't necessarily think we've got to collect. We've got to say, okay, open up the Springs of Divers and pick up that $25
right,
from each
right.
of them.
You think that Tallahassee then has done a fairly good job of preserving its charm?
I think fairly good would be the emphasis in that.
Yeah.
It's all incremental.
Yeah.
You know, We stop this project today, but the next one gets a little more of the pie than mm-hmm. we originally intended.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all incremental. I think it's being chipped away. Sure, I can say this. I'll be dead before it's ruined,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that it'll be that good 50 years from now mm-hmm. as it is now. But that, of course, is subjective.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who don't care about trees. They don't care about parks.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everyone would like to see the Tallahassee regional airport do better. We'd like to see it be cheaper, but I think we are on that path to it being a more competitive airport with more flights at less cost.
Sure. Well, and what do you say?
There's the example of, for instance, we brought in Sunil Harmon from Atlanta, and he brought in a team.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that has started happening in Tallahassee over the last 10 to 15 years, and which, sidebar, goes towards the FAMU situation. And that is, Tallahassee has become a town where people who became professionals from bigger cities are coming here and bringing us the sort of leadership and ideas that they learned in bigger cities.
Uh-huh.
And as I was saying, sidebar to FAMU is my main hope for FAMU is that they hire a president who has no previous affiliation with FAMU, who has been somewhere else and seen how other operations operate, and will come here with new ideas and big city ideas, or if not big city ideas, fresh ideas, professional ideas honed in another place. And that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing that with the airport in Tallahassee. I mean, we're seeing it with several businesses locating here. We're seeing it with the people we hire in city and state governments. I mean, Tallahassee is now big enough to attract people, professionals, who have been to bigger and better places and can bring those ideas here.
If you had a magic wand and you could wave that wand and say, this is what I'd like to have happen, what would that be? You have only one wish. What would you wish for?
Well, I always wish to hit the lottery.
For
We're Tallahassee.
Not talking about your personal gain.
Like everyone else.
Give it all to charity.
Well. my one wish for Tallahassee would be like everybody's, and that is I wish it could stop right now how it is, the way I love it.
Yeah.
You know, and that it never gets ruined.
Yeah.
But a better wish would be that many generations of people still keep coming here and enjoy it as much as those of us who have lived here. I've loved it, because there's no doubt there's something special about this town. People come here and stay. I don't know if that's true everywhere. People come to Tallahassee and fall in love with it. They fall in love with it because of the way it looks, the way it operates, and the people who live here. And I would wish that for many generations of people.
So there you are, my friend. This conversation with Gerald Inslee back in 2012. Maybe you'll agree at this point that those remarks
there are so many parts of that conversation that resonate with where we are now, and particularly his wish that he might find for us a future in which Tallahassee could be appreciated for what it is and be cautious about the expansion that is inevitable, but that could be managed in such a way that we don't lose our identity. Well, in some respects, too, I think that that identity is shifting because, as he points out, the old sort of parental, what I've called a plantation mentality, is fading, and it is being replaced largely because of the in-migration of professional people, and professional in many different ways, I guess. The word professional there having to do with coming from other parts of the country, even other countries around the world, and bringing us ideas, ways of doing business, ways of caring for one another, whether it's in commerce, if it's in education, if it's in some of our, let's say, cultural activities and athletics. It's all about where we are going at this point that is rooted in an honest, frank sort of discussion. That's what you have there. And it's our pleasure to bring it to you, as we do every week. We're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's radio to the world. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.